Hello and welcome back to Flash Knockdown. It's season 4, episode number 10. We're in Sheffield, England this week ahead of Dalton Smith's big main event with Jose Zepeda. Here's what we have coming up for you all on today's show. WBO World Welterweight Champion Sandy Ryan reflects on her sole career defeat and how that acted as a launchpad to her recent success. Unbeaten Mark Castro, he talks his step up against Abraham Montoya on April 6th. 12-0 Shabazz Masood takes on our Coach Trip Challenge quiz and gives us an update his end on what is next this year. And our good friend, the brilliant, the White Rhino, Dave Allen, recaps the best things to happen in boxing last week. What a show coming up from right here in Sheffield. Don't go anywhere. Well, delighted to be joined by Sandy Ryan this week. I must say, if only our listeners could see where we are. We are in, I think, a wedding venue in a hotel and we can't get the lights on. So we are using our phone torches across the table in the pitch black. Can just about see you
something
over there.
New.
Yeah, a little bit strange. But how are you, Sandy? Not long to go now, a couple of sleeps away. We're recording this the night before the weigh-in, but mentally, physically, what's going through your mind right now?
Just mentally on job, like on the fight, thinking about the fight, visualising it. I just do a lot of visualising at this stage because the work's been done, so mentally prepare myself, my mind for Saturday.
That was cold today in the press conference. Enjoyed it though. I mean, it was good. I think Eddie Hearn was loving it. He was sort of sitting in the middle of you guys, but... You know, do you sort of think about what you're going to say at these pressers, or was that seemed that you were almost reacting off what Terry said, and it seemed that when she talked about the sparring, it seemed like you got your back up maybe a little bit of what she's been saying. What can you tell us about what happened on the stage?
Yeah, it was like a look as in, are you for real? And I didn't know really how to express it, but that was my first expressions, and everything was real up there. Just wanted to kind of address what she was saying, because if she is going off me just having a new team and a new management team going across training somewhere else, then it's just more for her really. But you never really know what they're thinking, but I just wanted to address it and tell her that she's very wrong if she's thinking that. And it's gonna be a dominant performance. I feel it coming.
I've been lucky to sit and talk with you through numerous stages of your professional journey, before the Farias fight, after the Farias fight, after the rematch, the joys of that, and now here after the McCaskill controversy, and now ahead of this Terry Harper fight as well. But when you look at how you were after the Farias defeat, heading into the rematch, we had that very emotional interview where you got a bit upset and you were talking about, you know, the pressure that you felt and dealing with trolls and social media and all that sort of stuff. But is there some way that you can look back and be pleased that you went through all that? Because when you look at the McCaskill draw, that might have had a bigger impact on you than it did.
Yeah.
How do you look back on the emotional maturity that you've seen in yourself?
I see growth, definitely, because that's what it's made me mentally stronger now, to even the way I speak and the way I can talk and address myself. I feel like that's helped through what I've been through, and the way I can speak and then react to, say, at the press conference today to Harper, I can do that like flowingly, because I feel like the confidence and the mental strength that I have now through going through the stuff that I've been through, and the emotions, and it all leads to who I am right now.
Was it also, do you think, can you be proud of yourself that you lost to Erica Farias, and then some fighters really might have hit away from that, and it was still so early on in your journey, and everyone had tipped Sandy Ryan for big things, and that's what you talked about, that that expectation that was there, I think, was something that you struggled to deal with at the time. But you then took the decision straight back into the fire, want the rematch straight away. Can you be proud of yourself that you went through that? Because that was massive at the time. That rematch with Erica Farias was so big for you at the time.
It was literally, my career was on the line, wasn't it? So I had to really turn my life upside down and change the way I am, the way I approach myself, the way I handle myself, what I do in life. And I've just carried it on since then. And I think you can see in the way I carry myself fight week, come into fight week, come into the fight, weigh in, This is who I am, and this is who I intend to be for the rest of my career.
In what way did what you'd been through with Farias change the feelings that you had when you became world champion? Did it? Because I remember when you won the rematch and you were so over the moon, you were walking down the corridor singing. But when you won that world title, did it feel even sweeter? Because I'm sure in your mind, when you turned pro, you were going to do it unbeaten, stayed unbeaten for years and not had a blemish on your record. Did it change the feeling of it?
It did. And sometimes, I think with some people, they probably need to get knocked down to build themselves back up. And I felt like that's happened with me. Yeah,
I think it certainly has made it sweeter. Mm. And like I say, I think that maturity that you've shown helped you to deal with what happened with McCaskill. Maybe even gave you the courage to make this move to America.
Yeah, definitely. Because you can't be mentally weak and go across the other side of the world on your own and train and be in an uncomfortable environment. You have to be strong to do that, I believe.
What's been the hardest part of being in Vegas?
The time I've been there and how far it is away from, it's just not a quick flight home to see your family. You literally can't even come back for a weekend. So, I was there for a very long time.
Has that been tough, being away from your family?
It was tough, yeah. Like you've seen at the media workout, it was the first day I've seen my nieces since New Year's. So, like, just being away from them for so long, it was hard.
What would be your advice, Sandy? Because I always speak to fighters. I spoke to Lee Wood the other week in Saudi about this, and you know, when you go through a defeat, and like you said there, you feel like your career is completely on the line. And when you look at defeats and how you can grow from them and learn from them and setbacks, what would be your advice now you've been through it yourself and now you're a world champion where people dream of being? If there's a young fighter who's a young amateur or a young fighter who has just suffered their first setback, professional or at any level, what would be your advice to them as why it will be something that not only will help shape them, but something that won't define them?
Yeah, at the time, it feels like your world's ended. But like, I can promise you that it hasn't. As long as you just don't give up and you change a few things in what you do and you just put your 100% into it, into the work that you do, believe in yourself and the way you carry yourself, like, it can work out. That's my advice I would give.
Well, you should be really proud of yourself. I think everyone's proud of you, of the progress you've made in and out the ring. I can notice it. I mean, like I say, I've had the pleasure of interviewing you over the years. I've never really seen you in this good condition mentally, which I think, you know, everyone says this is so important. The mental strength is so important in boxing. Final one, when you look at the controversy of that McCaskill fight, is that, I feel like that's got you back up again. Is there anything in your head that is thinking, you know what, I'm not letting this happen again. I've got to win this fight on my terms, in my way. What's going through your mind in terms of some of your final visualisations?
Yeah, just a bit more fire and spite in me that's brought. And I'd make sure if the opportunity came that I definitely won't be leaving it to the judges.
And in terms of your visualisation, I've seen with fighters like Skye Nicholson, she's been writing out lines, I will become world champion on April 6th. Is the only words you're interested in hearing, and still? Do you go through mental exercises like that, telling yourself that?
Yeah, and still. And then I just, I visualise like the ending of the fight, how it's ending.
How does it end?
It actually ends with me stopping Harper Saturday night.
I can't wait. I can't wait. I don't know if it's adding to the tension or we're in this pitch black room and I can just see you just about across the table. But we can't wait. Your chief support live on the zone from Sheffield, Sandy Ryan versus Terry Harper. I've lost my words here. I can't even get my words out. Blimey. WBO World Welterweight Championship on the line. Do not miss it. Well, delighted to be joined by the White Rhino, Mr. Dave Allen. Dave, I was with you in Tenerife last week. We were all sitting having dinner, the sun was going down, we were filming the first scene of our documentary when disaster struck, didn't it? It was a bit of a nightmare, wasn't it?
A bit awkward, wasn't it? Because I was on fire as well at the dinner table, telling jokes, and then all of a sudden, I had to go from 100 to zero. It was just like, it was an amazing week really, but it did put a down on it for a short while. But you know, it's been rescheduled and back to business now. So Jack's very professional. You know, I've never been around. Only a handful of fighters I've ever been around can match him for professionalism and stuff. So I don't think it'll bother him too much.
Well, just for clarity, for those who don't know what me and Dave are talking about there, we were right there, and that's to come in the Make the Days Count documentary dropping soon, when Sam Jones got the call from Tom Grant to say the fight had been delayed. So certainly look out for that one. But Dave, you were out there obviously on business with one of your young fighters. What can you tell us about him and what the plans were as well in terms of sparring Jack in this camp?
Yeah, Joe Hayden, he's a 12-0 welterweight from the same village as me. I've been working with him for a while now, and we got the call off Jamie to go Tenerife sparring. He's been sparring Jack. He was sparring Jack for the initial, when the rematch was initially made. And he's been in camp with Jack ever since. He watched Foley, who was another southpaw. So we went to Tenerife. Joe went as a sparring partner. I went in holiday mode, got there, actually trained really hard, but also on holiday mode as well. So we had a great time, yeah. Joe, the kid that I trained and managed, sparred Jack, and it was really good. And yeah, it's just nice to be involved, really. Obviously, my career is winding down now, but I'm doing the training and the managing and stuff, and it's great to still be involved in boxing, never mind at the highest level, which is what Catchall Taylor is. It doesn't get any bigger than that. So yeah, it was nice for us both to be over there and involved.
Well, what's happening with you, Dave? Because it's your birthday today. You're 32 today, I believe. So yeah, happy birthday to you, mate. But what's happening with you? Because you seemed in good spirits. We were having a few chats off camera about, you know, potential fights and what you're looking at doing. You're saying you trained hard there. How many nights do you think you've got left in you? Big nights. And does it need to be a big night now?
Well, my old man had 30 professional fights. My great granddad had 31. I'm on 29. So I want to get to 32. I want to be the number one Allen man ever in this game. Three more fights. At what level? I'm not too sure, really. I've had a good run at it. I enjoyed it. And if there's no more big nights, that's fine. I would like three more. So, yeah, I don't give it much thought, really. I'm training. I'm boxing 2 weeks. Hopefully pick a win up there. And that takes me to 30. One more, then the old man can never say anything to me ever again. You know, I surpass him. And then I'm just enjoying it, really. I've trained some really good fighters. You know, we've got Stevie Levy, is a European champion, has a version of the European title. I'm just enjoying life, really. I've got kids running all over the place. I've got people probably haven't seen me for the last 4 or 5 years. I've not been on the big shows, the matchroom shows and stuff. But I've really got my life together and just enjoying it now. Had some mad times.
And some great times.
Had some hammer time, I'll tell you. We've had some mad times.
That's probably for another podcast, mate.
That's for the over 18 pod, yeah.
You'd have to charge people to listen to that one, mate. But no, Dave, to be fair, it's great to see you in such good spirits, mate. And I think everyone's enjoying seeing this side of Dave Allen working with the young fighters and as a dad now. How have the kids changed your life?
I think they've aged me. I'm 32. I think I look about 26, but other people will tell me that I don't. You know, I think the kids taking the responsibility on of training the fighters and stuff, it's just matured me. Being away from the cameras all the time as well. I think when you're in the bubble, the boxing bubble, it's not real life. I wasn't in the real world for like 10 years. When I landed the O2 and boxing price, I was 27, just turned 27. And I don't think, I didn't appreciate what was happening really. I had all this money and all these women or whatever, all of it. I never really, I was a child, like I didn't have a clue what was going on. And then it took me till a couple of years after when I thought, wow, that was me. I've got no regrets. I had a great, great go round. And what I did there is set me up for a nice life now. Hopefully a much quieter one. I've got no complaints at all, really. If I was to never, you know, have a big fight again, I'm more than happy with what I did. And life's pretty good now. I live a nice, steady life and it's nice.
That's great to hear, mate. That's great to hear. We're in Sheffield, obviously, this week. I think me and Scott often sneak into rooms we're probably not supposed to be in. I think we're in a wedding venue here in the crowd.
Yeah, Scott does that quite a lot, you know. Scott sneaks in places he shouldn't be going quite a lot.
and weddings. Quick one on this show, Dave. It's a good show. Are you going to come down? Are you going to come watch it?
I'm away for my birthday, actually.
Oh, where are you going?
I'm not sure. It's a surprise. My missus said, I've got you a surprise weekend, do I? I said, who's paid for it? It's not you. I said, oh, that's nice. Thanks for that. Nice present.
I reckon she's taking you to the Utility Arena on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, very possibly. You know what? I will be watching it, though. I will be watching it. I have a Dazone subscription. I have one, actually. So I will be watching. I am looking forward to it. I think Sandy Ryan, Terry Harper is a great fight. The fight of the night for me is Davis Williamson. That is one I'm massively intrigued by, as well as Donald Smith, who I think is exceptional. So it's actually a very good show. You know, if you look at what Hitchens did to Zepeda, you think Dalton Smith will do a similar job. But Dalton's a very, very good fighter. Yeah, he's one I really enjoy watching. I think it's the best card Eddie's done for a while, to be honest.
So you're on the Matchroom podcast. You've said you've got a DAZN subscription. It's the best card we've done in ages. You've not been on the big shows, the Matchroom shows. So you're after a slot, aren't you? You're hoping Eddie's listening to it, aren't you?
Yeah, not right now. I couldn't beat sleep at the minute. Never mind anyone any good. But yeah, I'm not using that nice really. Yeah. So yeah, I'm just, you know what it is. I get older now. I'm happier. I've got a more brighter outlook. But if Eddie wants one of his heavyweights, not beating up, but wants if he wants someone to box him, then maybe there's one more, but maybe there's not. But I am looking forward to Saturday to watch some really good boxing. Yeah.
What about Johnny Fisher versus Dave Allen?
Yeah, maybe not as well. The Fraser-Clark fight for me was one that upset me a little. The first time, probably with my age now, where I thought I would have won that 3 or 4 years ago. And I think Johnny Fisher is good. I think he's very good. I think he will be very, very good. But I don't want to keep going and thinking, couldn't beat him years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when I was a bit harder and a bit tougher. So, I don't know. I'm going to have this fight in a couple of weeks, maybe one more, and then I have to think I'm going to win. People probably think that I don't think like that, but I do. If I don't think I'm going to beat him, all the money in the world, I've never been put down by anybody. I don't want to be seen on my backside. And I'm very proud that I haven't. I've been in with good fighters and haven't. So I don't need the boxing no more. So a bit of soul searching, because I know I'm getting near the end, but I don't want to ruin the a good career that I had by being put out of my ass or backside. Not sure what kind of podcast this is.
I think arse is fine, isn't it? Just about.
That's fine.
Dave, we do have a couple of questions from the fans. So here is producer Scott, who's got a couple for you.
Thanks, Jamie. Well, yeah, as always, we asked the fans, what was the best thing to happen in boxing last week? And there's a couple of shouts we're just going to run over with you, Dave. So the first shout this week is from someone called Backbreaker. He says, the best thing to happen in boxing last week was the return of Dillian White. He says there's still some big fights to be made for him.
What were your thoughts on that, Dave? And where does he fit in the heavyweight landscape right now, in your opinion?
You know what? I don't really watch a lot of the boxing currently, so I'm a little bit in the dark with it. But you know, if he is back, there is big fights in the heavyweight division for him. You know, the last show on the Joshua Ngannou card, there's some very good heavyweights on there. And the card before that as well. So I'd watch a long fight with Dubois, Hergovic. You know, there's numerous heavyweights out there for him. So, you know, another good heavyweight in the mix.
And staying with that heavyweight mix, Andy Cans says the best thing to happen in boxing last week was Joe Joyce dusting off the cobwebs and then stopping Cash Ali. Andy says, get him in the 5 versus 5.
Is there still life left in Joe Joyce? Do you feel, Dave, after the two fights with Zhang at the age he's at, where he's at with his career, where do you see?
Yeah, I think so. I think, first of all, Cash Ali is massively underrated. He had David Price out of there till he bit him. You know, Cash Ali can fight like mad. So I thought Joe Joyce did well. Joe Joyce's head looked bigger than a Ford Fiesta the other day. Like, he didn't look in the best of shape. You know, his head was like, he was massive, weren't he? I wouldn't want to watch Joe Joyce. Joe Joyce is scary, you know. I don't want to watch Joe Joyce. Nobody does. Nobody did but Zhang. Everyone was terrified of him, and then Zhang dealt with him. But, yeah, the list, the line to box, the queue to boxing is still going to be very short, I think. You know, he's still tough. He's still massive. He's still going to be avoided. So it's going to be a long way back for him, because who's going to want to box him? But I still think he's an handful for definite, yeah.
The last shout this week is from Terry Carruthers, who says the best thing to happen in boxing last week was Lee Wood winning the Fighter of the Year award at the British Boxing Board of Control Awards. Well deserved.
Yeah, I think that was very well deserved for Lee. He had a very busy year, didn't he, really? The two fights with Lara and then Josh Warrington, of course. Who do you want to see him fight next, Dave?
I'd like to see him box Nick Ball on the 5 versus 5. I'd like Ball against Wood or Warrington.
Is there any weight issues, though, with Lee? I mean, he's moved up now. I think Josh has moved up.
Well, moving back down. just to suit what I want to see. No, I'd like to see Ball against Warrington or Wood. I'd like to see Nick Ball do some MMA. I've never seen a better wrestler in boxing in my life. He's so strong, isn't he? Yeah, Wood, he's had a mad couple of years, really. You know, the improvement he's shown has been off the scale. So yeah, congrats on winning that.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for coming on. A pleasure to hear you doing so well.
Enjoy your birthday week. Enjoy your birthday weekend as well, wherever you're going. And I'm sure we'll catch up very, very soon. Best of luck for your ring return in a couple of weeks. Where can people see that, Dave? And where can they buy tickets to watch you?
You can watch it on Fight Zone, and you can get tickets off me. Yeah.
Maybe don't give your number out on here.
No.
Dave, pleasure as always, my friend. Thanks for coming on, and we'll see you.
Thank you. Cheers, mate.
Well, Scott, it's great to be back in the Steel City of Sheffield, a brilliant fighting city. But that seems a constant, really, when you go to these cities across the UK, from Liverpool to Leeds to Manchester. Sheffield is certainly one of those. We've had many great nights here with Kell Brook, with Kid Galahad, but you get the feeling now that Mr. Dalton Smith, very much the flag bearer.
Yeah, definitely. And look, big win Saturday night against Zabeda, and he's not that far off a world title. So, yeah, it feels like a destination that will still live on over the next couple of years. You know, sometimes they fizzle out when, you know, Lewis Ritson sort of falls by the wayside and Newcastle then takes a backward step a little bit. This does feel like this is going to be a constant over the coming years.
And this is a great fight as well, Jose Zepeda. You know, I was saying on the live stream to Darren Barker a little bit earlier today at the press conference that Dalton, through 15 fights, fairly immaculate, not really put a foot wrong, as he's won pretty much everything he could win that's been presented to him, English, British, outright, and Commonwealth as well. Wanted to win the European title. Adam Azim slipped in, didn't he? Took the fast track and got in front of Dalton for that one. But this fight does represent a real step up. And what I think, Jose Zepeda isn't, you know, no disrespect to Jorge Linares. Jorge Linares was a brilliant name and was a brilliant fighter who I think was long past his best. I think Jose Zepeda still has a lot to offer. And I think this is a real, real acid test for Dalton Smith on Saturday.
Yeah, still has a lot to offer, but I still think Dalton will come for it and look good as well. I think the timing, I'm not saying he's washed by any stretch of the imagination.
Perhaps past his best, though.
Yeah.
He's 34, he's been around for a long time. He fought for a world title in 2015.
And let's be honest, it's only natural. The older you get, you're going to drop off. You know, your attributes in certain areas are going to drift. But that, you know, that being said, I agree with what you're saying. There is still something there. It's not like he's here for a payday or anything like that. I mean, mate, the conditioning he was in yesterday at the workout, I was, what, 3 feet away from him and he had his shirt off. He's ripped to shreds.
He's dangerous.
He's here, and he can punch as well. But saying that, look, we've spoke about, you know, just sort of in the car, I think, the other day, just going to one of the venues, you made a very good point. Dalton is accustomed to fighting southpaws. And
he loves it,
yeah. It's not too often you get someone who's as comfortable with that. So, yeah, I think that works quite well. And then I guess a little interesting subplot is if they're looking at this WBC route, Sandor Martin as well. So he's kind of, you know,
Eddie was saying today, he could well fight him next.
Well, I guess... Would
they do that next? I mean, Sandor Martin, I love Sandor. He's a great bloke. We worked with him closely, obviously, in the Matchroom Spain ventures. But, I mean, he's a difficult man to look good against, and
he's a difficult man
to beat, Sandor Martin. Very tricky southpaw, but who Dalton might like, but different style, I think, to what Dalton's faced before.
Yeah, definitely. I guess, look, when you get to this level, you're fighting someone like Zepeda. Where do you go after that? You can't go back a level.
Good point.
Obviously, the Azim fight's obviously there, and I say we've made it known that we want that, but, you know, you win the WBC silver title, which, interestingly, is currently on this table. I'm looking at it right now.
I didn't even see it. Got
a photo of Dalton and Zepeda. You win that, I believe that puts you in the top five ranking with the WBC. Sandor's obviously mandatory challenger. So, you know, why not? If it becomes a vacant belt, if Devin Haney moves on to something bigger and maybe better, this becomes available, why not take it? And then, I mean, financially, you're going to be secured for life after that. So, yeah, it's funny how just positioning yourself with one of these belts and winning one of these ranking belts, fans often look at them and think, you know, what do they actually do? But actually, it opens quite a significant door. So, yeah, I guess you win that. If it does come on offer, you roll the dice, really.
Yeah, I think, you know, the reservations are that Sam Maxwell's a good, solid domestic fighter. This is a considerable jump from that level.
Yeah, something I say quite a lot, and I've definitely said it on this pod before, I think British fighters can miss out on this level. This leap, this steady step up, I think that can get overlooked. And then you make a bigger jump and then you get found out. I think Dalton is taking that interim sort of world level fight. And I think it's brilliant matchmaking. Credit to whoever made this fight. I think Dalton will come through, look good, and it will be a very big box ticker to say he's ready for that next step.
Absolutely. Look forward to that main event on Saturday. Dalton Smith, Jose Zepeda. And I want to grab a quick word on that chief support as well, because we're seeing in boxing at the minute, I always said this, I think right at the start, my biggest gripe was the best don't fight the best. I've got bored of saying that, often enough at least anyway. We're seeing it with what's happening in Saudi, with Riyadh season, that seems, hopefully it's going to continue, become something of the past. Boxing needs these fights to happen. I think people are losing interest in the sport because they were waiting. Why is he not fighting him? Why is he not fighting him? The politics, the broadcasters, everything, the promoters, everything was getting in the way of the fans' enjoyment, the entertainment, and the big money fights for the fighters. Now I think the wheels are starting to turn. I think Eddie and Frank, they know that they need to start delivering these fights for the fans. They've put their differences aside for whatever reasons they might be, you know. And I'm sure that the Saudis have helped that be a bit easier. But this fight with Terry Harper and Sandy Ryan was probably a fight Eddie looked at and was like, Terry's a big ticket seller. She's a world champion at 154. Sandy Ryan, you know, looking to navigate her to try and be undisputed. He didn't have to make this fight.
No.
But I think credit to the internal matchmakers, obviously Tom Dallas and the team at Matchroom, credit to both girls, because this is a fight that everyone wanted to see. But for some reason, it was one of them fights that was right underneath your nose, but we didn't think would ever happen.
Yeah, I guess a couple of reasons for that. I guess Terry, you know, flittering around the different weights and whatnot. But coming back to something again that we've said on this pod, you know, the loser can come again. Why not? I'm sure it would be a ding-dong. I can't see it being a boring fight. I think it will live up to expectation. The best girl will win and come again for the loser. You know, it's not the end game, I don't think. If Terry Harper wins, becomes a three-weight world champion, then she needs a lot more credit than I think is currently on her name. Eddie mentioned at the presser earlier, and something I didn't know about, you know, the two wins were against champions. It's quite...
Yeah, Eva Wallstrom and Hannah Rankin.
Yeah, you know, let's be honest, the talent depth of pool in the women's game is not as much as the men's game. There's a lot of vacant belts, especially with, you know, undisputed champions sort of being mopped up at those weights. Terry Harper's beat two world champions and I think deserves the credit for that.
Yeah, definitely. And credit to Sandy as well, because she has made a big change after that fight with McCaskill. Everyone has their opinion on who they felt should have won that fight. Terry also coming off a somewhat controversial draw. It wasn't the best fight in the world against Cecilia Breakers, but I think maybe she did enough just to nick it by a couple of rounds. So it's certainly a big fight for both of them. But like you say, I just think this needs to be drilled in. It's, and you know, if you look further down the card, this, you know, the idea that these promoters can put plans in place if a fighter loses is, you know, you look at Troy Williamson, you know, he lost to Josh Kelly. I think he won a six rounder, then he lost to Kevin Ajarko. Now he's in a final eliminator for the British title. I just think there has to be a contingency plan, and that will encourage the fighters to take these risks.
Yeah, look, you know, I've spoke to fighters, I won't name any names, coming off a defeat, it's the end of the world, and you know, they lock themselves away from their loved ones.
It's actually terrible.
And they probably think, you know, my career's done here. But like you say, if it's drilled into them, it's not the end of the world. We're going to reward you for taking a meaningful fight that the fans want to see, the broadcasters want to see, and it will actually benefit you in the long run. So if you do come up short, then, you know, we can build you back in. I think everyone's a winner in that case.
It was like that for Sandy, obviously, with Erica Farias. Yeah. She returned and she's a world champion now. She'd be unified, really. Terry Harper obviously stopped emphatically when that was a devastating result.
No one saw that. No one saw that coming.
You know, she was out on her feet and her world fell apart for a bit of time. But now she's right here, chief support on a big show. So, yeah, I hope this can continue because it seems in a really good place at the moment. One, from a bit of good news and exciting fights to one that I'm so glad is still happening, but my heart was in my mouth a little bit. Tenerife, as you heard on the Dave Allen chat there, flew to Tenerife after Riyadh. Landed from Saudi. Obviously, the fight was on a Friday. Landed like Saturday evening, Monday. Got ready. Went to Liverpool on Tuesday. Spent the day with Josh Taylor. Had a really good day's filming. Wednesday morning, first thing, flew to Tenerife to do training camp with Jack Catchell for our big behind the scenes in camp documentary. We are 3 minutes in to the first scene. I want to say 5 minutes max. So we've met the team outside the CAF restaurant place on the seafront. There's Jamie Moore, Dave Allen was there with one of his young fighters sparring Jack Catchell, Nigel Travis and Cameron Vong and Sam Jones, and it was brilliant, right? So they walk into the restaurant, they sit down, there's loads of banter, they're ordering all the food, salads and what have you. Not many beers were floating around. Well, I think we had a few beers behind the scenes. Apart from Nigel, he might have had a beer. And Sam's phone rings and it's Tom Grant, who's Josh Taylor's lawyer. And before you know it, 3 minutes into the first scene of the documentary, the fight at the minute, I was like, oh, it's off. So it was disastrous, really.
And it's all on camera and it will all be coming out.
Yeah, you need to wait for this because it looks fake. I'm willing to do a lie detector. I'm willing to do anything I can if people doubt it. because no, people will watch it and they will go, this doesn't look real.
You know what? I disagree because actually, I've seen the footage. Jack Cantrell's reactions show you that it's real.
Yeah, and also, Jack Cantrell. I mean, I know Jamie Moore and Nigel Travis have been in Peaky Blinders, so they've got a bit of acting background. Jack, he couldn't act that.
No.
It's real.
And, yeah, it was kind of gutting to see. You know, it was obviously tossing up, do we put it out or hold it back? You know, you see the full range of emotions of when a fight falls through, the emotion of I'm not fighting him, to, you know, I'm gonna have a burger, to I want to fucking rip his head off.
Yeah, he went through the meal in the space of about 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, honestly, everyone will really look forward to watching that. It's brilliant. It looks like something out of a reality TV show or Corey or, honestly, it does. It is, but it's brilliant. And I just Jamie Moore and Nige, obviously they were very disappointed for Jack and. I think they were sort of making the eyes at me to stop filming with the lads. We had a big sound crew out there, two great big cameras and a three-man crew, a sound man, the whole lot.
I suppose what's fascinating...
I just said, no, we're keeping going. Because I basically said to Jamie, like,
this is real.
You'd have regretted us stopping there.
The thing that's great, I obviously wasn't in Tenerife, but I've seen the edited footage. The thing that's great about it is you're getting it from every angle. You're getting it from the fighter. You're getting it from the manager and you're getting it from the trainer. All three range of contrasting emotions in it. That's what I found fascinating. So definitely make sure you watch Make the Days Count in the build up to May 25th because it's going to be great. And I guess you'll have to go and film some more because I'm sure Jack Cantrell weren't in the mood to do very much.
We didn't do a lot, sadly, which is understandable. You know, I think even though it's 4 weeks, people might look, oh, it's only 4 weeks. Jack Cantrell's got a peak at the right time. Mm. That was what we got from Jamie Moore. So. Him carrying on and doing loads of hard spars at that stage of camp didn't make sense.
Yep,
so,
definitely.
All right, for us, we didn't get the content, but we were in Tenerife. It was quite sunny. Could have been worse.
That's boxing, mate, as well.
Yeah, of course it is. It's all part of the game, and that's the beauty of live sport. You never know what is around the corner, good or bad, as sad and mad as that sounds. That's why we love it. That's what keeps you on your toes, and that's where you get that buzz from. I am interested. May 25th, of course. The hate runs deep. It ran deep before. I get the feeling it's running a little bit deeper.
Just when you think how can they hate each other anymore, you get this thrown in, you know, his accusations of he's done it on purpose and stuff like that.
All the plan originally.
Yeah, so I mean, Jack's, can you imagine the next time? I suppose it'd be fight week now. They're not going to come face to face before then. Imagine that first face off when I suppose you know at that point, okay, the fight's going to
can't go anywhere now.
It's going to be carnage.
I do probably think there's worry from the Cantrell camp.
Yeah, maybe it is mind games. But you don't know. We're speculating, you never know. It's a funny old game. But I'll tell you what I would say, I love that fight was added today. Paddy Donovan and Lewis Ritson.
Yeah, that's a great fight.
That's a real interesting fight. And just heard little whispers behind the scenes of maybe one or two other fights added to that card. So if you have got tickets and you're thinking about getting a refund, I would suggest keeping hold of them because they're gold dust. And the card that's going to unfold on that night, I think, is going to be pretty tasty.
Can't wait. But keep your eyes peeled, like I say, for that Coronation Street Love Island style scene that we filmed in Tenerife. Make the days count. Taylor Cantrell 2 coming very, very soon to Matchroom YouTube.
Well, we are delighted to be joined on our In Focus section of the podcast this week across the pond by rising super featherweight star Mark Castro ahead of April 6th, big card in Las Vegas. Mark, great to see you. First of all, great to see you smiling and in big spirits. How have you been? It's been a few months since I've caught up with you anyway. Actually, it might have been even longer than that. I think the last interview we did was over in Vegas in a Canelo fight week. But how have you been?
I've been good. I've been just staying low, training hard, and just getting ready for April 6th.
You scored another really impressive early night back in November against Gonzalo Fuendeleza. But we haven't seen you since. Has that been planned or did you intend to have a little time out? What can you tell us what's been going through your mindset and your motivation in the last few months?
I always been training since I last got out there. My main thing is I know that the fight's training, so I just been preparing and just ready for whenever match wanted me out, and it's now April, so you guys will see the improvement.
What do you enjoy? I mean, you're still only a young man, of course, but what do you enjoy about these big Vegas fight weeks? Do they still feel as special every time you head out there?
What is special for me is I always have a lot of fans supporting. I know they spend their hard-earned money to go watch me fight, and to me that means the world to me. Seeing them come together every fight and how like my support keeps growing tremendously, that's what makes me happy.
And with the support growing as well, Mark, and your experience as a young professional as well, do you feel like you're getting more to grips with everything that comes with being a professional boxer, the different pressures, all the media? How have you found yourself adjusting in the years as a pro so far?
I've learned a lot of things for myself, whether it's training and whether it's in the ring, out of the ring, with public image and all that. But the main thing I learned about myself is I just like to treat every day as a regular day, try to make the most every day and keep everything the same. So once fight night comes, it's just another day in the office. And that includes like keeping my circle small, not talking to quite as many people, and just kind of for the social media, just kind of planning it out. And if I'm not boxing, just try not to be seen.
Well, it's Abraham Montoya next. Looking at him on paper, 22-5-1. Your toughest test to date, would you say? What do you know about him?
Most definitely my toughest test. I know that he's been in there with other great boxers at super featherweight, and I know that he has a win over Venado Lopez, the current world champion. So he has a great resume, and I know he's never been stopped as well. So yes, my toughest test.
Does that add a little incentive for you, a little bit of extra motivation, that the fact he hasn't been stopped, and you can really, you know, you have a great opportunity to make a big statement here, Mark?
Most definitely. Like, you're always thinking about like, all right, the best case scenario. So that's what we're training for. But at the end of the day, like, I'm training for 10 rounds and I know he's going to come to fight.
And I'm delighted to reveal exclusively here on the Flash Knockdown podcast, I believe you were told about this, Mark, a little bit earlier on, but you're fighting for your first professional title, the WBC Continental Americas Super Featherweight Crown. How does that make you feel when you hear that read out and knowing this is your first opportunity to etch your own name into the professional history books?
It's amazing, especially the green belt. It's my favorite belt. WBC is a great program. I actually won their amateur title back in the day. I'm really excited. I know I got to go earn it. I know it's not going to be easy, but at the end of the day, nothing in this world's easy and nothing's going to be given to me.
Why was now, Mark, when you're talking to Kev Rooney and your management team and Eddie, why did you feel now was the right time to take this step forward and take this step up as well?
I feel like my team and a match room and my manager, Keith Conley, would feel like I'm ready. And since they feel like, and my father and my coach, they feel I'm ready, then most definitely, like, that's what I want to do. I want to just, we're moving as a unit, and that's the most important thing to me.
And you were talking earlier there about the motivations and keeping your circle small, but what's it done for you when you know you have this date in the diary, in the calendar, you know you're fighting for your first professional title? Has that made the early runs that bit easier? Have you noticed a change in your mindset in training camp?
Most definitely, like April 6th, once it's announced, once you know it's official, it's different, you know? There's, I don't want to say extra motivation, because motivation comes and goes. I feel like I treat it like a job. It's I'm here to do my job, and sometimes you don't want to go to work and sometimes you don't want to do it, but at the end of the day, you get it done, and that's how I look at it.
And the belt, of course, on the line at super featherweight, Mark, we know you've fluctuated between super feather and lightweight a little bit through your journey so far, but why do you believe super featherweight is a division for Mark Castro right now?
I feel like I'm the most comfortable at super featherweight. Trying to figure out the weights was a kind of an issue, but now that we got it figured out, we should be rocking and rolling.
And you say that your body feels best at 130. Why is that? What advantages do you believe it gives you in the ring in terms of making the most of your skill set?
I just feel like at 130, I feel like I'm my best, and I could be at peak condition, and I'm fast, strong, and really have a lot of agility.
When you look at the dream, Mark, before we get your final prediction for this fight, the dream for you, I'm sure, like over here in the UK, we've got a young fighter in Dalton Smith headlining, I believe, for the third time now in his home city of Sheffield. It's become quite regular for him, but he still always loves being here in the big stage in front of his people. For you, is it headlining in Fresno? What is the roadmap and what is the dream for Mark Castro?
Most definitely it's headlining in Fresno, in my hometown. That's always been a dream of mine, and it's been a dream for my family, and that's the most important thing to come headline here in Fresno, have all the kids that can't come travel to come watch me fight and have them get the opportunity to see me live here in Fresno.
And although, Mark, you have big dreams to reach that level and box for world titles in Fresno. It's a short career that sometimes goes really fast for fighters. Why do you always try and enjoy every chapter of this story whilst you're living it and whilst you're in it?
It's important because I'm doing this every day, and I just try to find the joy, whether it's like the morning runs, whether it's the late night workouts. And it's just, it's what I love to do. And I know that sometimes training could be tough, and I know it's all going to be worth it on the day of fight night. And I know those memories live on forever in my supporters' hearts.
And Mark, just finally, for those watching on DAZN, when you think about this fight at night, when you're visualizing your ring walk and the first bell ringing, how do you see yourself winning this fight? What do you see being the final moments of this fight on April 6th?
I feel like the final moment would be me getting my hand raised. I'm not going to say I'm going to knock him out, but I'm going to say that I'm putting on a great show.
And the new, how excited are you to hear those famous old words?
Yeah, I'm very excited because I know the WC Continentals, it's a big step for big things ahead.
Well, we can't wait. Mark, stay healthy, stay fresh in the rest of camp. April 6th, Mark Castro fights for his first professional title. No doubt it'll be very much the first of many. Mark, thanks very much for joining us. We look forward to catching up with you very soon. Top man. Well, joining us for our charity quiz coach trip section this week is unbeaten Mr. Shabazz Maverick Massoud. Shabazz, good to speak to you, mate. How are you? It's been a little while, actually.
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, mate. Ramadan at the moment, but I'm training as well this year. I'm still training through Ramadan. I'm fasting, so it's been a difficult one so far.
Well, that was actually one of the reasons I wanted to get you on, mate, because I think it's quite fascinating, really. How does your daily schedule look during Ramadan? What can you tell us about that and the type of adjustments you've had to make as well?
It's basically upside down, my days. So my nighttime's more like my daytime, and my daytime's more like my nighttime. Like today I woke up especially early for you guys, but normally I'd be in bed now till about 12:30, 1 o'clock. And then thankfully Ben down in Essex, he gets me in a late session about 4 o'clock. I'll finish about 5:30, 6 o'clock. And then I come back, I can open my fast and get some water in me, and then I'll go sleep for a couple of hours. I'll wake up through the night about 11, 12, and I'll go back in the gym and I'll do my running or my S&C. It's completely changed on his head because I'm up most of the night and I'm asleep like most of the day. So,
what impact does it have on how you feel in training as well, physically?
Physically, to be honest with you, I feel strong enough to get through it. Like years ago, I used to spar and everything as well whilst I was fasting, but as my body's grew, I do need the nutrition in me as well, but it's not too bad, honestly. You just got to just focus and get through it.
And the weight as well? Do you find yourself losing quite a bit of weight during this period as well?
Yeah, I do have to eat a bit more extra, but thankfully got a little plan in place where I'm not losing too much weight and I'm maintaining muscle as well.
Well, good man. I do want to talk to you a little bit about the last fight, obviously back in November of last year. It was a bit of a strange period, wasn't it, for you? Obviously, the fight pulled out and then it was rescheduled.
Yeah.
Time. A close fight against Jose San Martin, who was a tough opponent. How do you reflect on it now? I know, obviously, you were very disappointed at the time, but what have you been able to take from it since?
I was back in the gym after the fight. I was back in the gym just working on things that I wanted to improve on. And even my health, like a lot of people didn't realize that my health wasn't the best. It was one of them. I just needed to keep on training. And over time, my body just healed up. I got better. And now I'm just back charged up again, ready to go. I watched it back loads of times. I did think I did more than enough to get the win. But at the same time, in boxing, everyone's got an opinion. So there was a lot of opinions being thrown about as well, but it is what it is, man. It comes with the territory.
Has it given you a bit between your teeth a little bit the next time we see you on DAZN on the big platform to show us truly what you're about? Has it made you feel that way?
Yeah, 100%. Like I've said this, I only want big fights. I only want good fights. The next one, everyone will be your best friend. You know what I mean? You're only as good as your last performance. Obviously, my last performance wasn't as better as my previous performances. So it is what it is. On to the next, and we'll show out next time.
Well, last week, someone in your weight division, someone you know well, Mr. Liam Davis, continued his rise. What did you make of his performance?
He did his job. He did well, but regardless of that, he didn't beat me. When it comes time to fighting me, we'll see then.
Is that something, Shabazz, that has been discussed? I mean, obviously, we have the 5v5 looming. I think there's announcements hopefully coming very soon. How much would you love to fight him on a stage like that?
Yeah, 100%. Honestly, I've never shied away from any fight. I know him well as well, and we boxed twice before. I beat him twice. And you know what? I'll make it 3-0 next time.
What makes you difficult for him stylistically? We know you're a very skillful, crafty fighter, but why do you believe that is a fight you win 10 times out of 10?
Because IQ and skills pay the bills. That's how I look at it. Yeah, he's on a good run at the moment, but that don't matter. Until you beat me, it don't matter.
Well, what a fight that would be. We look forward to any potential news with you, Shabazz. We do move, however, onto the charity quiz element of... So I'm going to hand over to producer Scott, who's going to go over the rules. Are you ready, my friend?
Yeah.
Thanks, Jamie, and welcome, Shabazz, to Coach Trip. As Jamie says, this is all for charity. At the top, we've got Cameron Vong, who scored 9 out of 10. Rhiannon Dixon is in second place with 8 out of 10. So if you get in the top three at the end of the series, you are in line for a charity payout. So it's 10 questions, and it's essentially, how well do you know Mr. Ben Davison? It is multiple choice. So if you don't know, you can have a little wild guess and hope for the best.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
All right, mate. So if you're ready, we'll get into it with question number one.
Yeah.
Who is Ben's favourite fighter of all time? Is it A, Floyd Mayweather? Is it B, Mike Tyson? Or is it C, Roberto Duran?
Floyd Mayweather.
Sounds like you knew that pretty easily.
Too easy. That's all he's watching.
1 out of 1. Second question. What's Ben's favourite fight of all time? Is it A, Hagler versus Hearns, B, Morales versus Barrera, or C, Mayweather versus Canelo?
Mayweather Canelo, all day.
2 from 2.
These are easy, man.
Well, maybe you spoke a bit too soon there. The boxing questions are pretty much done now. Now we move on to the next sort of phase. Question number 3. Excluding boxing, who is Ben's sporting hero? So it's not a boxer. Is it A, Michael Schumacher? Is it B, Ronaldinho, or is it C, Tiger Woods?
Tiger Woods.
You sure?
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because Ben said, I bet he guesses Tiger Woods, but the answer is actually B, Ronaldinho.
Oh, you know what's funny? As soon as you said Ronaldinho, I was thinking it, but...
Oh, mate.
Because he mentioned it before as well.
Question number 4. What is Ben's favourite song? Is it A, The Strokes' Last Night? Is it B, The Arctic Monkeys' I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor? Or is it C, I Can't Pick One, I've Got Too Many?
I can't pick one, I've got too many. But his playlist is mad. He'll come in like a mellow mood, and then you've just got rap bangers playing next.
you got it right, you couldn't pick one. So 3 from 4, you still could join Cameron Vong at the top of the list if you get the rest right, mate. Question number 5. What's Ben's favourite holiday destination? Is it A, Italy, B, Dubai, or C, Spain? So Italy, Dubai, or Spain?
I feel like Spain, because he's got a family villa out there, so...
Good guess. Right. 4 from 5, mate. Well done. Question number 6. What's Ben's favourite takeaway? Here we go. Is it A, pizza, B, Turkish, or C, Chinese?
Turkish.
Oh, it's not, mate. It's pizza.
He's always talking about Turkish food.
Maybe that's like the more healthier option in front of you boys. I suppose pizza shies away. Well, look, you still could be in line for a charity payout if you get the next couple right, mate. So this is question number 7. What shop does Ben do his food shopping at? Is it A, Ocado, B, Amazon, or C, Waitrose?
I don't know. I feel like it might be Ocado, because he's quite bougie like that.
Yeah, good guess, mate. You got it right. It is Okada.
I just knew he's too busy. He was just getting delivered.
Question number 8. What's Ben's shoe size? Is it A, 8, B, 9, or C, 10?
Got this feeling. He's 8.
What size are you?
8.
You ever had to borrow any of his boots or anything like that?
Boxing boots. You give me a pair.
You're going to go for 8?
I don't know. It's a bit. It might be a tiny bit bigger. It's 8 or 9, but do you know what? I don't know if you give me an 8.5.
Don't, I'm afraid, no.
Let's just go 8.
Oh, you should have rounded up, mate. It's 9.
Oh, dear.
Right, last two. Here we go. When's Ben's birthday?
Ben's birthday?
Yeah. Is it the 27th of September, the 28th of October, or the 29th of November?
Oh, my gosh. I'm going with 1.
You're going to go September?
Yeah.
It's November.
Oh, my gosh, man. You know what's funny? I could have just gone on my phone and looked at when I wished him happy birthday and just found out. Cheated, but
oh, you cheated, so it's a good job you got.
I could have cheated.
And last question, mate, what is Ben's pet hate of you? So what does he dislike? And actually
there's a good few things.
you know what, it's actually okay. We've had some really funny ones on here. Is no comment. B, it was so he was unsure. Or C, you have no faults. So it's not too bad. It's either no comment, or no faults.
You know what? Ben is a big, he is big for that. So let's go with that.
You got it right. Yeah. Well, mate, you got 7 out of 10, which is very good, actually. And I think you might be in touch and distance of third place. So the end of the series, you could be in line for a charity payout. If you are, we'll reach out to you, mate. Just closing up, you said there could be a couple of pet hates of Ben Davison has of you.
Would yeah.
Any you want to tell our listeners?
Ooh. I don't want to tell.
Well, thanks for coming on, mate, and being a good sport. Just going to pass you over to Jamie to wrap up, mate. Appreciate your time. Yeah,
appreciate it. Well played, mate. Good performance.
Cheers, mate.
You happy with that?
No, I wanted more, man. I should have got more right.
No, look, you still did well and you still want more. So that shows the listeners the type of fighter you are. You know, you have that resilient mindset, perfection.
Nah, honestly, I'm waiting to get 10 out of 10, but I'm annoyed now. I should have just cheated. I had my phone in my hand. I could just...
Well, you can ask Ben about being too bougie with his Ocado shopping orders when you see him today, mate.
Yeah, I just knew it, you know. I just knew it. I just had that feeling. Nah, I appreciate that. Take care, yeah.
Well, that's it for today's show. I can't believe already 10 episodes into series 4. It feels like only yesterday we did the pilot. It's amazing that we're still here, to be honest. But that is it for today's show. Thanks to all of our guests, Mark Castro, Sandy Ryan, Dave Allen, and of course Shabazz Masood as well. Before we go, don't forget to give us a follow, subscribe across your preferred podcast platforms, and make sure you tune into The Zone this Saturday from Sheffield, Dalton Smith versus Jose Zepeda.